Becky Brown with your December Club New Life Collective. We are so excited. The holidays are here. Merry Christmas from all of us to all of you, our amazing New Life family. Every year we receive cards with your pictures, and it's such a great way to see how God has transformed your lives and to celebrate the new life that you have. Because of your support, a lot of people are having a very different and a much brighter Christmas this year. Thank you for helping make that possible. Each December, our New Life team finds a fresh way to celebrate Christmas. This year, our radio hosts will be sharing wisdom that is sparked by a quote from a Christmas movie. There is a variety of Christmas topics, including the difference each person makes, expectations and anxiety, rethinking your thoughts, the feeling of being sad, estrangement, loneliness, regrets, self-care, faith, and thankfulness. Now, some of those don't seem very bright or Christmassy, but you'll see as you listen through each and every one of our co-hosts. Let's listen in. Merry Christmas, everybody. It's Becky Brown. It's a Wonderful Life is one of those movies that never really gets old. It reminds us that what we do and who we are truly matters. In the story, George Bailey feels like life hasn't amounted to much. He's tired, discouraged, and convinced the world would be better off without him. But when he's shown what the world would look like if he'd never been born, he sees how deeply his life has touched others. Clarence the Angel puts it perfectly. Each man's life touches so many other lives. When he isn't around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he? That message echoes what Jesus teaches in Luke 15, the story of the shepherd who leaves 99 sheep to search for the one that's lost. To God, every single person is precious. He notices even when one is missing. It's easy to forget that in everyday life, to think all our small efforts don't make much difference. But God sees every act of kindness, every prayer, every word of encouragement. Your presence matters. Your life leaves fingerprints of grace wherever you go. So as we move through this season, remember, you don't have to do something grand to make an impact. Live with love, faithfulness, and compassion, and trust that God is using your life to touch others in ways you may never see.
Hello, New Life family and friends. This is Chris Williams, co-host of New Life Live, and it is our Christmas edition. And if you know me at all, you'll know that one of my favorite all-time Christmas movies is Christmas Vacation. It is hilarious from beginning to end. But one of the scenes in the movie is when everyone's kind of like, hey, the disasters have happened. It's all kind of gone awry, and there's no bringing this back. But Clark, in his classic Clark Griswold unending optimism and hope and determination, says this: nobody's walking out on this fun, this old-fashioned family Christmas, and we're gonna have the happiest Christmas ever. It's this funny scene because, again, he is so determined to make it what it obviously is not. Maybe that's your holiday experience. We come into the holidays with so much expectation, oftentimes hope or desires. Maybe it's other people's expectations that we're carrying, and we are dogged and determined to make it the happiest Christmas ever. But how often do the best laid plans go awry? On the backside of this, in addition to resentment or frustration, it creates a lot of anxiety around the holidays. And maybe just the anxiety is that you know going into it, the holidays will be a reminder of what's not rather than what is or what could be. Regardless, I want to remind you that the holidays is about celebrating God coming in to the most difficult, hardest situations of our life. I think it's good to remember that God was born into an impoverished teenage woman who had to then become a refugee, who then had to raise this child in this family in these difficult circumstances and ultimately see her son die on a cross. And the point is that God points his nose straight at the most difficult situations on planet Earth and says, I'm going there. And I think that can be true for us in that whatever we're dealing with, especially in the midst of expectations gone awry or anxiety being stubborn and present, that we can invite God into those moments and that he can enter into them because he is used to and in fact desires to enter into the most difficult and heartbreaking points of our life. It's just a reminder of this simple command or even invitation in Philippians chapter 4, verse 4. Friends, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. Remember, as you're going into this holiday season, the ultimate thing that we are celebrating is that God is with us, and he is there to hear our requests. And so, in the midst of our anxiety, let's be prayerful, thankful, and seeking the presence of God. Wishing you a Merry, Merry Christmas, a fantastic holiday season, but above and beyond all of it, hoping and praying God with you. Thank you.
Hi, this is Dr. Jill Hubbard. Today I want to reflect on a quote from the well-known classic Christmastime movie, Miracle on 34th Street. Do you remember the part where Kris Kringle is speaking with Doris in her office at Macy's department store? She says, Christmas is still Christmas. And he followed with, oh, Christmas isn't just a day. It's a frame of mind. I love the message that Kris Kringle was trying to communicate. Don't we all notice that at Christmas time, there's a different feeling in the air? People seem to try to be a little kinder, more caring, and more giving towards others. While Miracle on 34th Street is not necessarily a Christian movie with its emphasis on Santa Claus, if we put it into a Christian paradigm and look at Kris Kringle as a prototype for embodying a Jesus-like character, stay with me here, the concern Kris Kringle had about people forgetting the true spirit of Christmas and forgetting about him, because of all the hustle and bustle and materialism and self-focus, isn't that also true of how Christ often gets lost in our Christmas seasons? And isn't the magic of Christmas time something we yearn for all year long? And isn't it really about the good news of good tidings and great joy of Jesus? If Christmas time is a frame of mind, then don't we constantly need to be reframing our thoughts on Jesus and being more intentional about exuding his presence in our lives towards others? Not just at Christmas, but every day of the year. We don't actually even know that Jesus was born on December 25th, nor was it likely snowy or winter time. But I'm glad we have a day that is an altar to Christ, that we can organize around the significance of God humbling himself to become a vulnerable baby, to show us the way to true salvation and life everlasting. We need days to commemorate things and to draw our attention back towards what's important. Now, I know Christmas time is hard for so many people and many of our listeners because life has not gone the way you had hoped and circumstances are such that it's hard to find joy. This is where we must remember what Paul said in Philippians 4:12. That he has learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. Joy does not come from our happenstance, as joy is deeper than happiness. And it has been proven that happy people don't actually have easier lives, believe it or not. But rather, they make a choice to focus on the good and intentionally act happy. I'm not saying it's that simplistic, only that gratitude does tend to crowd out our discontent. and that it is possible to rethink our thoughts. Here are a few New Life resources that might be of help to you. You Are What You Think by our dear Dr. Dave Stoop. Tame Your Thoughts by Max Lucado. We just did an awesome interview with him. And In the Area of Sexual Addiction, Every Believer's Thought Life by Steve Arterburn. I do wish you all a very Merry Christmas season and pray you will consider taking your thoughts captive, which means as thoughts float in and out of our minds, the ones that don't serve us well, we let pass on through and we become more intentional about where and how much weight to give and put our attention towards. Feelings do follow our thoughts and our actions, and our feelings don't always tell the truth. Let's lead with truth and reframe those unhelpful thoughts. Again, Merry Christmas to you all. Dr. Jill Hubbard, signing out for now.
Hello, it's Brian Perez, host of New Life Live, and one of my favorite Christmas movies isn't actually a movie, it's a TV special. Personally, I can watch a Charlie Brown Christmas any time of the year, even in the summertime. Whether it's the scenes of children ice skating, or Linus reciting the Christmas account from the Bible, or kids gathered around that beautiful Christmas tree singing Hark the Herald Angels Sing, it's the most heartwarming 30 minutes you can spend. While we can learn a lot about perseverance from the history of this TV special, I want to emphasize the underlying theme, that is, the sadness of Charlie Brown. Charlie just doesn't get it. At one point, he tells his friend Linus that he thinks there must be something wrong with him. Christmas is coming, says our protagonist, but I don't feel the way I'm supposed to feel. And how does Charlie Brown think he's supposed to feel? Well, happy. Chuck admits he likes getting presents, sending Christmas cards, and decorating trees, but he tells Linus, I always end up feeling depressed. Imagine that, the topic of depression being addressed in a 1960s cartoon. Perhaps that's you this holiday season, or maybe every holiday season. Everyone around you seems to be happy, enjoying the holiday. I mean, they started listening to Christmas music on the 1st of November, if not before then. They can't wait for the company Christmas party, the family get-togethers, the gift exchanges, the baking of cookies. But you, like Charlie Brown, just don't get it. And not for the sake of not trying. After all, it's more blessed to give than to receive. Jesus said that, according to the Apostle Paul, so it must be true. So you took that to mean you needed to overspend on Amazon, empty your wallet at Walmart, and still you feel like you missed the target. Why do so many people, admittedly myself included, feel drained and depleted by the time December 26th comes along? Where do these feelings of sadness come from? Perhaps you start thinking back to your childhood. Your family of origin didn't have much, and though you vowed things would be different once you became a parent, that hasn't quite panned out. Or maybe you're grieving the loss of a loved one, whether through death, divorce, estrangement, or separation. Where did we go wrong? And how can we fix it? Better yet, what steps can we take before the big day comes to prepare for it and not feel overwhelmed? In Psalm 34, we read, I sought the Lord and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. Is that you, friend? What makes you fearful and tearful? Why is your heart broken? Why is your spirit crushed? In a Christmas devotional that you can find on newlife.com, New Life founder Steve Arterburn reminds us that when things are stressful, we can stress less. How? The most basic way is to pray and get into God's Word daily. You might know that one, but are you doing it? Schedule time for self-care. Running yourself ragged while searching for the perfect gift, perfect dress for the party, or perfect recipe is a recipe for disaster. Self-care, so important. When you feel overwhelmed, take a break. Go for a walk. Listen to some worship music, even Christmas worship music. After all, Jesus is the reason for the season, right? Put down the phone and look up at the person next to you. Seek out one-on-one connections. You don't even have to talk about Christmas. Last but not least, you'd expect me to say this. Call us here at New Life or attend a life recovery group. Find one at newlife.com. I'm Brian Perez from New Life Live, wishing you and yours a Merry Christmas.
Hello, New Life listeners. This is Mark Cameron, licensed marriage and family therapist and co-host on New Life Live. Christmas is a time of gathering with family and friends. It's a season of peace on earth and goodwill to all men. Yet more and more people are finding themselves estranged from family because of unresolved conflicts. In the classic Christmas movie Home Alone, young Kevin McAllister gets so mad after being mistreated that he wishes his family would disappear. And then it actually happens. At first, he's thrilled. He gets to do whatever he wants. No rules, no one telling him no or taking his stuff. But before long, the loneliness sets in. And in one scene toward the end of the movie, he tells a mall Santa, "I know you're not the real Santa Claus. I'm old enough to know how it works, but I also know you work for him. Will you please tell Santa that instead of presents this year, I just want my family back?" Now, most people who are estranged from loved ones don't actually want to be estranged. They've just been hurt or stuck in painful patterns, so they take space. Then time passes and it gets harder and harder to find a way back into a relationship. I know this experience personally. After my dad cheated on my mom, drained their bank account, and left her for another woman, I was furious. I wanted him to apologize, to take responsibility, and to give the money back. But every time we tried to reconnect, he sounded so selfish and unreasonable, only wanting to focus on his pain. So I distanced from him, and eventually it just felt easier to have him out of my life, less messy. And I even stopped thinking about him or missing the relationship. Then 20 years later, I found myself on the radio talking to people about estrangement. Now, life is messy, and I had to make a decision whether I would just continue to be estranged from my dad for the rest of my life and then one day get a notification that he had died. And if so, what might I feel in that moment? So I made a decision. I reached out to establish at least some kind of connection. He hasn't changed dramatically, but I can manage a conversation with him now, even if it's about superficial things. And that's something. Recently, I spoke to someone who shared a similar story to mine. His father had been an abusive alcoholic when he was young, and they hadn't spoken in 22 years. His dad didn't even know he had a third child who was now a young adult. Someone told him his father was now sober, and though in his late 70s, was doing his best to follow a Christian life. And he agreed to a phone call. During that call, he told his dad, "I forgive you." And his dad replied, "I forgive you too." When he asked, "For what?" his dad said sincerely, "For being a difficult child." That response hurt. But instead of reigniting the conflict, he chose peace. Now, we all have our stories. And while the details differ, the core pain is often the same. We feel hurt that the other person doesn't recognize our wound, won't admit that they were wrong, or believes we owe them an apology. In most conflicts, both people think they were more wronged by the other. This isn't unique, but when we offer forgiveness and choose peace, we free ourselves from the prison of bitterness. So this Christmas, if you're estranged from a family member, as you celebrate peace and goodwill to all men, consider, how can I be a peacemaker? The person you're estranged from may not meet all your expectations. They may not even apologize or ask for forgiveness. But you also don't have to dive back into a deep relationship with them or see them often if it doesn't feel safe yet. But forgiveness is as much for you as the person being forgiven. And remember, your kids may be missing out too. Sometimes parents end up being better grandparents than they were moms or dads. Thanks for listening. And for all of us here at New Life Live, Merry Christmas.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jackie. I'm one of the co-hosts on New Life Live, and I've recently been thinking about a quote from a movie. As the holidays are approaching, I'm reminded of this quote from A Christmas Carol. "But sir, Christmas is a time for giving, a time to be with one's family." And it made me ask myself, is this true for me? Is this true for my family, my friends, my clients, our callers? Is this a true statement? And what came up for me is, yes, in my life, this is true. This is a time where I feel more generous and I'm more giving. I'm looking forward to seeing my family. We'll even go out of our way to see each other during this season. And I think that's true for a lot of people. But I also think that it's true for people that it is difficult during this season. There are many of us who have lost loved ones during this season, and so we may struggle and feel alone. There are many of us who have estranged relationships, and in this season, we may be experiencing some loneliness. Many of us are unable to give in the way that we may want to due to our financial circumstances, and so that might not make us feel as joyous during this season. But all of that can be addressed in several ways. But first of all, we have to know that the most important thing about this season is that we know that we are loved and that we matter. And so we want you to know that you are not alone. You are loved. You do matter. And if you are feeling lonely in this season, if you don't feel that need and joy of giving and that desire to spend time with friends and family, or don't have a way to do that, and would like to get started and maybe try something new, I have a few suggestions. First, maybe invest in the relationships that you have. Give somebody a call. Send somebody a text. Set up a one-on-one. Try to nurture the friends and the relationships that you have, because nurturing those bonds improves the connection and the quality of those connections. And then try maybe volunteering. Take up a new sport or take a class. Join a book club. Maybe join a walking group. Try to engage with some new people. Social engagement is so important to our mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Find a good church community if you do not already have one. And then if there are any underlying negative thoughts or emotional difficulties that may be weighing you down and adding to your feelings of loneliness, give us a call and let us help you find a counselor that can help you move through those feelings and those thoughts and get you to the other side where you have connection and relationship and can have the best holiday season imaginable. I wish you a Merry Christmas and a fruitful and abundant blessed new year. Merry Christmas.
Hello, New Life family. I'm JJ West. And as we continue our series on Christmas movie quotes, today I'm going to be talking about regret. In the movie Scrooge, starring Bill Murray, his love interest, Claire Phillips, says, "That's the one good thing about regret. It's never too late. You can always change tomorrow if you want to." Regret is one of the most haunting emotions we know. It's the ache of what might have been, the faces of the people we hurt, the words we can't take back, the paths we wish we'd taken. However, regret is not merely a wound to be avoided. It can become, in God's hands, a doorway to redemption. Tim Keller argues that regret is what happens when our false saviors collapse. When the things we built our identity on fail us, Keller would tell us that regret is not meant to destroy us, but to dismantle our pride. It brings us to the cross where our failures no longer have the final word. The Christian doesn't deny regret. We face it, but we face it with hope, because in Christ, the worst things we've done can be forgiven, and the best things we've lost can be restored. Regret becomes the soil where grace grows. Similarly, C.S. Lewis reminds us that regret reveals our longing for another world. In The Great Divorce, he wrote of souls trapped in self-deception, unable to let go of their sin because they refused to let God redeem their past. Lewis understood that regret, when left to fester, becomes hell, a place where we rehearse our mistakes forever. But when offered to God, regret can be transformed into a strange kind of joy, because it means we have glimpsed goodness and we mourn its loss. That very mourning is a sign that we were made for redemption, not despair. Regret, in Lewis's vision, whispers of heaven, of the day when even our tears will be redeemed. But we do not mourn as the world mourns. Indeed, 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 10 says, "For godly grief produces a repentance that leads to salvation without regret, whereas worldly grief produces death." So regret is not our enemy, it is a messenger. It tells us that we are moral creatures who care, who have loved, who have lost. You probably already know that Scrooged is a modern retelling of the Charles Dickens classic, A Christmas Carol. Thayer's quote about regret echoes a line said by Ebenezer Scrooge at the end of the story. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Dickens paints a beautiful picture of this astounding truth. Regret, when surrendered to God, becomes not the end of the story, but the beginning of redemption. This is what we celebrate at Christmas, that God came to us in the flesh to break us out of our smaller stories of shame and regret, and to usher us into his larger story of redemption. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Hi, I am Dr. Alice Benton, honored to be one of the co-hosts on New Life Live. Let's talk self-care for this holiday season. I want us all to protect our peace so that we can spread our peace over the holidays. You remember the movie Elf? Elf grows up, Buddy, the elf, grows up not knowing his father, but he meets him later in life. In an attempt to build relationship with him, Buddy brings a list of all the good things he wants to do with his dad in a day. The list is written out on an etch-a-sketch, and he says to his father, I planned out our whole day. First, we'll make snow angels for 2 hours. Then we'll go ice skating. Then we'll eat a whole roll of Toll House cookie dough as fast as we can, and then we'll snuggle. He ends in triumph. His father doesn't even crack a smile, but rather tells his son, well, I have to work. Disheartened, Buddy shakes the etch-a-sketch, erasing the list and retracting his offer. His father missed that this was an opportunity to bond. We have a limited number of yeses that we can give to the opportunities that come our way this holiday season. And if our highest calling is to love God and love others, let's prioritize saying yes to the people opportunities while still being cautious to protect our peace. My oldest is 13. That means I have about 5 Christmases left before he turns 18 and possibly goes out on his own. And so when he asks me to go out and play catch with him, to scratch his back, to watch the video game he's playing, my internal response is often, I have to work, or I've just come from work, and I'm tired. But knowing that I have limited time with my son, it motivates me to say yes when my flesh wants to say no. On the other hand, if I tried to do everything that Buddy proposed on his list, I'd be pretty grumpy by midday, and I would no longer be a loving, fun mom to be around. So we have to balance our cautious yeses with no's to some activities so that we can protect our heart posture. God warns us that doing the right thing with the wrong motivation doesn't really count for much in the kingdom of God. In fact, it can be destructive if that becomes a pattern over time. One holiday season, I decided I was going to make a feast for my family, and I am not a good cook. I went all out. I made an appetizer, a great main course, and a dessert. I even cleaned the kitchen before my family sat down for the meal. It looked dazzling, and yet I exhausted myself. And so I served that meal with a side of bitterness and resentment that I had worked so hard without any help. Not that I'd accepted the help that was offered. I said yes to too many good things, and I became irritable because of it. I spread myself too thin. So this holiday season, let's be cautious that our yeses are yeses, our noes are no, so that we can protect our peace and spread our peace. God bless you, and I hope you have a great holiday.
Merry Christmas, everyone, and may you have a blessed and beautiful holiday season. I'm Jim Burns. Thank you so very much for listening to New Life Live and for your generous support to help transform lives one at a time. Hey, my family and I love watching Christmas movies at this time of the year. Maybe your family does too. One of our favorites is a movie called The Polar Express. Here is one of the many quotes from that movie, and I absolutely love the movie, and I love many of the quotes, but here it is. Seeing is believing, but sometimes the most real things in the world are the things you can't see. You know, I wonder if the writer of that wonderful screenplay had Hebrews 11:1 in mind when he gave that quote. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we cannot see. I don't know about you, but there are times in my life when I think about faith and I have hope, but I just don't see it. This is where, well, faith comes in. I'm going to tell you a story. Eric was not only raised in a Christian home, but his parents were pastors in a thriving church. And when Eric graduated from high school, he went on to college. And like a lot of the students, he drifted from his faith. And his parents were heartbroken, and they were deeply concerned. And Eric dropped out of college. His parents prayed and prayed and prayed. And at every turn, it seemed like his life got worse. Sexual promiscuity, drug use. He couldn't hold a job. He couldn't hold a relationship. And because of his shame, he wandered from the family, he wandered from his church, well, and he wandered from God. Eric's mom and dad prayed and prayed. They didn't see any change. It just kept getting worse in their mind. 15 years later, on Christmas Eve, Eric's dad was preaching, and Eric's mom was sitting in her usual seat at church. Eric had not shown up at a family gathering that week, and they were worried and concerned. And she was sitting in church, deeply troubled and losing hope. Little did she know that God had continued to walk closely with Eric, and he was doing a major work in his life. Well, at that moment, Eric stepped into the church after 15 years. He stood in the back where a bride would stand as he prepared to come down the aisle, just like a bride would. Well, the congregation was singing a favorite Christmas hymn. When they sat down, Eric's mom looked to her left, and there was her son, Eric. He took her hand, and all he said was, "Hi, Mom. I'm back." Well, his mom started to cry. Tears rolled down her face. Eric even leaned over a little bit later and said, "Mom, this is a bit much." Later, his mom told me that she cried for 3 days. Her prodigal was back, different, walking with a bit of a limp. Not literally a limp, but he'd carried a lot of baggage with so many poor choices. Well, later, Eric unpacked his life over those 15 years. And although his parents had not seen or felt change, Eric talked about God being present at every wrong turn, every broken relationship. His parents believed, but they didn't see all that God was doing. Eric often saw what God was doing, but, well, he ignored it or disobeyed. God was not done with Eric. He carried him, and as that beautiful movie says, seeing is believing, but sometimes the most real things in the world are things that we can't see. I mean, Hebrews 11:1 again reminds us that even when we don't see it, God is working. Well, if you're struggling with a fear, a broken heart, a mess, remember that this Christmas season, God says to you and me, "I'm here with you, even if you don't feel it, even if you don't see it." He says, "I'm listening to your prayers. I'm working in your midst. I've got your back." Have faith. Merry Christmas from New Life.
I have a quote from the movie White Christmas. "If you're worried and you can't sleep, count your blessings instead of sheep. Then you'll fall asleep counting your blessings." It's one of our favorite family movies. My dad used to watch it all the time. And then my nieces, we all love White Christmas. But the funny thing is, it's not a Christmas movie. I mean, it takes place during Christmas, but there's no manger, no shepherds, no wise men. It's filled, though, with warmth and friendship and reminders of gratitude. And then there's the line when Bing Crosby sings to Rosemary Clooney, "If you're worried and you can't sleep, count your blessings instead of sheep." It's a simple song, but it holds deep truth. We've all had nights like that when worry keeps us awake, and our minds run through lists of what's wrong or what could go wrong or what we don't have done yet. The world can feel heavy, but that lyric gently invites us to turn our thoughts toward thankfulness. Paul says in Philippians 4, 6 through 7, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God." Notice that phrase, "with thanksgiving." Paul doesn't just say, "pray about it." He says, "pray with gratitude." When we thank God, even in the middle of uncertainty, something shifts inside of us. Gratitude reminds us of what's already true, that God has been faithful before and he'll be faithful again. Each blessing we name becomes evidence of his care, a loving family, a warm home, a meal on the table, a friend, the quiet beauty of a winter morning, your health. When we start counting blessings instead of problems, anxiety begins to lose its grip. And as Paul promises, the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. That peace doesn't come from everything being perfect. Thank goodness. It comes from remembering who holds our lives in his hands. So maybe tonight, when the worries start whispering and sleep feels far away, take Bing Crosby's advice and Paul's. Don't count your troubles, count your blessings. Whisper them to God, thank him for each one, and you just might find his peace settling over you like a warm blanket on a winter night, and you'll fall asleep counting your blessings. Merry Christmas. I don't know about you, but I might need to take some more notes from that last section. So much wisdom wrapped up in a neat little package for us. Our final section of this collective captures a few short conversations between the radio hosts. And of course, the theme is Christmas. We will cover an essential gift for others and ourselves. That's between Chris, JJ, and me. The need for a pause, you know, like a rest. That's JJ, Chris, and Jill talking about that. Finding hope with Sherry. Being emotionally healthy at Christmas. That's Jim Burns. Celebrating Christmas with emerging adults. That's with Mark, Alice, and Jill. A Christmas letter from Jesus. That's Jill. And love God, love yourselves, and love others with Jackie, Chris, and Sherry. I hope this will be an encouragement to you. Let's listen in. It is the season of gift giving, and I wonder what you guys are getting for yourself. Like, what's your Christmas? What's your Christmas list? I mean, you know,
can I get a half an hour of alone time? Is that too much to ask?
Put that on your schedule.
Ooh, I like that. I want that on my list. Yeah.
Well, you know, when you think about all the people that we minister to, counsel, and you know, you just like you just said though, Chris, is a time for themselves. You know, some of the best gifts that you can give to others is helping them with their mental health, with your mm-hmm. own mental health.
Yeah.
And because it changes the future. You know, you think about the men that you serve at Every Man's Battle, JJ, that you are impacting their legacy. Mm-hmm. Their family will be different. And I know many times we hear from people who will say, New Life has changed my life
yeah.
because of what we've learned. You know, whether it is an anger problem or a porn problem, there is help for that. So what would you say if somebody who needs some help, mm-hmm. but they feel awkward in asking for help, or maybe they're in denial, maybe they don't even realize that their family has been saying, hey, you really got to, you know, check on yourself. What would the two of you say to somebody who's kind of stuck in not knowing how to take care of themselves? Chris, we'll start with you.
Taking care of yourself in different ways, the result is nobody dies.
That's good.
Like, I really mean that. Like in this sort of, we create all of these internal blocks and barriers, all these reasons why. You know, and I'll use myself as an example. A family member confronted me on an issue about a year and a half ago, and it was around the issue of the management of finances. And I was, all of these defenses were in me, where it's like, well, you're not managing yours that well, or how do you know? Or like, I didn't think they had the right information. But I was like, oh, for me to go get help in this area of my life, what would be the downfall of that? Mm-hmm. Whether the person was accurate or not, or whether what was ever going on in their lives, my defenses were keeping me away from the help that I needed. Mm. And so by taking a deeper dive into that and really getting the help, I'm not saying it solved all my problems, but it certainly moved the needle of my life to better.
Mm, I love that.
Getting help, no one dies.
That's we want everybody to live. That's yes. good. JJ, yes. JJ, how about you?
I love that. I love the idea of being able to hear in somebody else's criticism, in somebody else's critique of me, even if I don't think they have a right to say anything, or I don't think they have all the right information, or I don't even think their criticism is accurate. What in it can I learn from? What in it can be used for good? There's a great old article called The Cross in Criticism by Alfred Poirier. And he does a good job of making that as one of the points that no matter where it's coming from, no matter what it's saying, am I willing to listen to what's there? Let God use what's there to help heal me. And I would just add one thing, which is we recognize from Scripture as well as ourselves that the sins of the fathers are revisited on the third and fourth generation. But the blessing of the righteous, if I choose righteousness, healthiness, wholeness, that blessing goes to 1,000 generations.
So good.
So it's a great return on investment.
It sure is. That'll be the best gift that you give your family this year. If you need help, you know we are here for you. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433. That's how you get help. Or you can go to newlife.com and you can see all of the different ways. You know, maybe you even need to download the free app, because then we'll be in your pocket all the time.
You know how we feel rushed most of the time?
Yes.
No, and I would know nothing about that.
No, nothing about that. Right, right. There's just a few of us, just a few of us. And then we enter into the holiday season, the Christmas season, well, Thanksgiving to New Year's, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like the rush factor gets kicked up to 10.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Everything mm-hmm. feels like we're running around. I mean, today I'm going from counseling sessions to radio interview to being on radio to more counseling sessions to preparing for podcast. Like, it's just a crazy mm-hmm. schedule today.
Where's the Christmas shopping in there?
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, here's the real question. Where is the Advent? The
yes.
reflection?
That's good. Thank you.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The slowing down to say, come Lord Jesus into this space, Emmanuel.
Yeah.
God with us. Mm-hmm. God not with us as a bystander who is mm-hmm. not really caring about what's going on with us, but God with us as the one who sees our hearts, the one who sees our frantic schedule and says, come to me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden, come and I will give you rest. He doesn't say I'll give you more to do. He doesn't say, I'll give you a shopping list.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, I'll give you a guilt trip. He says, come and I will give you rest.
That's so
for
good.
Your souls. And, oh, I just need that. Mm-hmm. I need that because yep. I do. I take on too much. And I need to pause and reflect on the one who came to be with me and still comes to be with me and invites me to be with him.
Mm-hmm. That's so good, JJ. I was thinking about Isaiah 7:14. And before I read the verse, I'll say this. We're oftentimes also looking for a sign, right? Kids will look for signs of Santa Claus. But many of us are looking for a sign from God. Mm-hmm. God, will you show up for me? Will you, if I do prioritize Advent, will you be there for me? And Isaiah 7:14 says this, therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. And here is what it is. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and we will call him Emmanuel, God with us. Yeah. And I think we can't see a sign we're not looking for. Mm-hmm. And so this is such a huge reminder, JJ, that, hey, we're looking for a sign from God. Hey, let's keep our eyes open. Let's create this space. Because what is more important, more essential, more urgent in our life than God with us? Mm-hmm.
So I had somebody send me this morning
a song that was done by the Tabernacle Choir. Mm-hmm. And the song is, "It Is Well With My Soul." And I knew that there was some story attached to that where somebody died at sea. But I got to tell you, I had no idea the whole story. And there is a musical rendition out there by the Tabernacle Choir where there's a gentleman that actually tells the story of Horatio Spafford and his wife, Anna. I didn't know that they actually lost four daughters at sea.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Anna had gone. They were going to celebrate Christmas in Paris. And so they were on a ship. The husband got stalled because of work. He said, "Hey, I'll catch one out there. Don't worry. I'll be there." But while they were on the voyage, the ship hit another ship and it went down. And two of the girls, she was holding on to two of them. Two of them got separated, the 8 and 9 year old, on the ship, and they went down. And then she had two of her daughters ended up in the water. And she lost their hands, a 2-year-old and I think a 4-year-old.
Oh, my goodness.
So they found her floating on a board in the water.
Wow.
I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah.
Losing all your kids at sea and living. I literally thought, I don't even think she wants to wake up.
Yeah.
So Horatio, they connected once she woke up. And the story goes on from there. And there is actually more loss.
Wow.
They lost another little boy. But their whole story was mind-blowing to me because Horatio is the one that penned the line in a poem that "It Is Well With My Soul." And that's where we actually got that hymn, "It Is Well With My Soul." When I think about this Christmas season, it is such a funky juxtaposition of celebration, joy, happy, and loss.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have people even say, "I've been kind of happy, sad,"
yeah,
about what's going on. But the faith of these two people that had tremendous loss, it made me look at my own life today with everything that's going on.
Hmm.
And I thought, wow, they gave me hope. They gave me hope in a good God that no matter what you're going through right now, whether it's a good season or a bad season, or even if it's reminiscent of losses that those that aren't there, I just want you to know there is a God that wants to be with you and is with you, and it can be well with your soul.
Oh, that's so good, Sherry.
You know, I was thinking about the season because, you know, we're in the middle of Christmas season and you know, just the holidays could get so stressful. And one of the things I wanted to say was, you know, to our listeners is, you know, what we have to do is we can choose to be as emotionally healthy as possible.
Yeah.
And when we choose and we do the work, then peace comes. And sometimes what that means is in the midst of busyness like crazy or extra, you know, overworking on whatever it is, or dealing with drama in the family, I think we have to spend, you know, some time with God on a regular basis. I want to challenge them to actually literally, this is kind of more pastoral, but, you know, make sure that you're putting at least a scripture in your mind every day. And, you know, this morning I woke up to this in my mind, you know, "This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." And there's an action part to that. Let us, it's intentional. Let me rejoice. Acknowledge that, you know, that God is present. And I think when we do that, I think we get healthier. And also, I think we have to make sure that we're not responding and reacting. I'm a responder and reactor, both in the good side and in the negative side. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm with drama and trauma in my family, I want to make it all better, or I want to react to silliness. And what I need to do sometimes is lower the temperature. So I'm going to challenge our people today to lower the temperature at family gatherings and things like that. You don't have to put it all together, and you don't have to argue about whatever the latest political thing is or whatever. Just sometimes, you know, if we keep our mouth shut, there's a couple that I was with last week having a great conversation, and they had not been with their parents for some time. They were going and they were in trepidation. I said, you know, this isn't the time to argue and try to make it all right. Let them enjoy the kids and give them a good experience. Then bring the next thing. They called me up. They go, we had a great night. And actually now they're open to spending more time with us on in a situation where there'd been some real conflict. I'm not saying the conflict.
Yeah.
You got to face conflict and you got to work through it. But you don't have to do it at the Christmas table. Or, you know, on Christmas Eve.
Time and place matter.
Yay. Time and place matter. So that's just simple, but get as emotionally healthy as you can. And sometimes we let that go when we're so busy.
You know, as you said, with the drama and trauma of family, we oftentimes go into these situations and our mind is preoccupied with who they are.
Yeah.
But I think it's the wrong preoccupation.
It's really
good. I think the question isn't who are they? The question is who am I and who do I want to be? Mm-hmm. And I think with that encouragement to connect to God. Yeah. There is a person I want to be. I may not be able to fully access that guy. I'm going to need God's help.
Yeah.
You know, and I think of, you know, that Jesus came in the fullness of grace and truth. I want to be a person that is graceful with others and truthful with myself. So, and I want full measures of that. Mm-hmm. And may I bring that this Christmas, but I'm going to need God's help to do that.
Today, I want to talk about being adult around your family during the holidays. So we are a blended family, my wife and I. We've got two 19-year-olds. And in the last 18 months, we've had to take a step back and respect that they're emerging adults and they get to take decision-making in their lives and be responsible for the direction of them. So they're still dependent upon us. Our daughter still lives with us. We provide her room and board. And so we get some say, you know, when she comes home at night, there's a limit. She can't be walking in at all times. But we have to respect their decisions, even when they're not decisions that we would necessarily take for their lives. Now, most of us stay in our families of origin for about 2 decades, and we fell into a role during that time. So your role may have been the oldest and been expected to take care of younger siblings, or you may have been the peacekeeper in your family, or your parents might have even allowed you not to say no to them. Mm-hmm. And your role was to submit. And now, though, even though we're adults, when we get around our families, especially during these holiday gatherings, we can fall back into those roles, even subconsciously. Now, the Bible tells us to honor our father and mother. It's one of the commandments. And in the New Testament, Paul also says, children, obey your parents. But when we become adults, we're no longer children. We're adult sons and daughters, and we should become peers with our parents, and they should no longer be in authority above us. Now, honoring our parents does not mean doing what they tell us to do. Still, it means acknowledging that they played a role in our upbringing, and we need to acknowledge the good and the bad. There's no perfect parents out there.
Can I interject something? So something that's good about my stage of life is that all of the protest against parents is kind of done, and the leaning back in and embracing what was good that was there.
Yeah. So, what I was going to finish with is
sorry. I was just identifying with what you were saying, and we all regret.
Yeah, to honor our parents is not meaning that we need to still be in authority underneath them, right? Mm-hmm. And one thing Steve would often say is that, you know, it's not honoring to honor the dishonorable here.
Right.
Now, interestingly enough, honoring our parents is part of the Ten Commandments. But back in Genesis 2, God says a man needs to leave and cleave. And he says this right after he creates Eve. So he's already telling them right before they have kids that one day your kids are going to grow up and they're going to need to leave and cleave from you. So Eric Erickson, he's a well-known American child psychoanalyst. He identified some stages of development. Now, the first stage is trust, but the rest of them throughout childhood are all about separating autonomy, initiative, industry, identity. So as you get together with your family over these next 10 days, 14 days, think about the role you might be falling into and if it's healthy still, and consider emancipating yourself from that role if it's time to do that here.
Emancipate yourself. Mm-hmm. I like that phrase. It's Christmas Eve.
It is Christmas Eve. Yes.
It's Christmas. It's here. And are you ready?
No.
Are you ready? Because ready or not.
Here it comes.
It comes. Okay, absolutely. So I have a poem.
Okay, go for it.
That probably people have heard, but a friend sent this to me. A Christmas letter from Jesus. When you look for me at Christmas, you won't need a special star. I'm no longer just in Bethlehem. I'm right here where you are. You may not be aware of me amid the celebrations. You'll have to look beyond the stores and all the decorations. But if you take a moment from your list of things to do, to close your eyes and say a prayer, I'm waiting here for you. You're the one I want to be with. You're the reason that I came. And you'll find me in the stillness where I'm whispering your name.
Oh, my goodness. That's so good,
Jill. Isn't that good?
Yes.
So it's whatever is happening around you, it's here. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm always, supportive of not missing the moment.
Yeah.
And JJ, last time we were together, you talked about pausing. And so to pause, whether you have a crazy, chaotic family, right? Find that moment to pause. And I think of Christmas Eve for me. I go to church and it's that moment to pause mm-hmm. and really remember what it's all about. And it's the night, it feels like the night he came.
Yeah.
Like, and that we're all saying, he's here, he's here.
Yeah.
The next day, Christmas Day, is like the celebration. He's here.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's like, no, in the stillness. And whatever your situation, maybe a lot of people have lots of people around them. Other people might be alone.
Yeah.
You might be completely alone on Christmas. But remember, the shepherds were alone.
Mm.
And the angel showed up to them. And then there was a whole heavenly host of angels.
Yeah.
So we're never really alone. So whatever your misery, set it aside.
Yeah.
Set it aside for tonight and tomorrow. And then you can pick it back up on the 26th.
Oh, I absolutely love that. And even we can have that experience of feeling alone in the midst of a crowd.
Sure.
And there is a painful experience of being alone in your own family, even with
sure.
your family,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And I just think of Mary and Joseph were alone in Bethlehem, though mm-hmm. they were surrounded by people.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are the moments that truly God, through Jesus, points his nose straight at our toughest situations and enters into them. And mm-hmm. that's really what this Advent and Christmas season is about. So Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, you guys.
So Christmas. Merry Christmas. One of my favorite all-time Christmas movies is It's a Wonderful Life. And my wife makes fun of me, very appropriately, by the way. It's well-earned because I'm always going around, Merry Christmas, like the old Jimmy Stewart, right? So, Merry Christmas, you old New Lifers.
Merry Christmas.
So, Dr. Jackie Mac-Harris, I'm curious, what present do you have for us this day?
First, I'm going to start with the scripture. One of them, an expert in the religious law, tried to trap him with this question, "Teacher, which is the most important commandment in the law of Moses?" Jesus replied, "You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. A second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commandments." And in this season, in my work, one of the things I'm noticing is the difficulty that people are having in the relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want people this Christmas to remember to love God, love themselves, and love others. All of the stuff that is going on in the world around us is going on in the world around us. It does not surprise God at all, but he told us to be peacemakers. He told us as much as it is possible within us to keep the peace. And he told us to love God with everything in us and to love ourselves and to love others like we love ourselves. And I think this Christmas, the best gift we can give is to release ourselves from the confinements of anger and disappointment and bitterness and disagreement with people who don't think like we think
mm-hmm.
and just love one another.
Yeah.
Go into Christmas with the knowledge that God loves you so much that he came to make a way for you to stay in relationship with him, even though we make choices that he's not happy with, even though we do things he disagrees with.
Yeah.
How dare we cut people off because they think differently than we think, or disparage them because they think differently than we think, when we serve a God who has been so generous and forgiving to us. And so I just want to remind people that Christmas, Emmanuel came.
Yeah.
And they said he would save his people.
Yeah.
And so if we stand on that as believers, we've had so much to rejoice about. It's a time to celebrate that Jesus is real and a king is born.
Yeah. Well, and it just reminds me too that love takes work.
It takes work.
You know, a couple of years ago, as I was working on a book and not yet published, but I was really diving into the characteristics of love described in 1 Corinthians 13. You know, patience, kindness, mm-hmm. hopefulness.
Doesn't keep record of wrongs.
Yeah, truthfulness. And what is unlove, right? Like envy, jealousy, you know, fits of rage or easily angered, wrong-keeping, mm-hmm. self-seeking. Rooting those things out of our lives, replacing unlove with love, it takes work.
It takes work.
And it's funny because you pick the right word, peacemakers. Do you know there's a difference between peacekeeper and peacemaker?
Yeah.
A peacekeeper is somebody that's being harmed and is a doormat. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A peacemaker is somebody that does the harder work of love, that has to make a treaty with somebody, mm-hmm. that has to say, this isn't working for me. We need to figure something else out. And so there's some effort, like you said, and we can be peacemakers, right?
Absolutely.
This time of year can be really special or honestly really tough. If you're having a hard time, please don't hesitate to reach out. We're here for you in every season. Hope is just one call away. Let us help. You can call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, or maybe you check out newlife.com for a video or some other resource that could be helpful. We are here for you, and we are grateful for you. You know, when I think about Christmas, I remember a time when my children were real small, and we had hired a Santa, if you can imagine, and he showed up in the middle of the night like Santa would do, and my girls were so frightened that they could barely go back to sleep. But it reminds me of a saying that Larry Sonnenberg has said many times, that God is the God of surprises and interruptions. And sometimes we experience surprises that seem scary, but ultimately are a gift to us. I hope that this Christmas there are gifts that surprise you and interruptions that bless you. I'm grateful for each and every one of you. Merry Christmas.